It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios joining you this morning, and I want to start this morning with a big congratulations to the founder of the American Family Association, Don Weilman, because tonight at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, he's going to be receiving the Hall of Fame Award. That's a very big deal. It's happening tonight, and certainly there are a number of reasons why Don Weilman really is the definitive leader, really, I think, of the social conservative movement. And I remember when I was very young, seeing him on television, this Mississippi preacher, talking about indecency on television, and it just really caught me, and his passion caught me. And the thing that always amused me was, you know, I'm a Yankee, so, I mean, I heard this very Southern man, this very Southern preacher, smart like a fox, and it was just really very engaging. And he went on to found the American Family Association. And all of the things that we have accomplished now with, radio stations, a journal, the American Family Association based in Tupelo, the AFA Action Network, with millions of people joining to really make a difference in this country. So I want to say my personal congratulations to Don Weilman, who was a good friend of mine when I was the president of Concerned Women for America. I found him to be one of the truest, dearest, strongest leaders in the family movement. A little self-deprecating, so perhaps you didn't know that. But I'm telling you, he had a spine of steel, he still does. And so he very much deserves this award, and he's receiving it tonight at the National Religious Broadcasters. And in a note sort of related to that, we have been targeting Target. We've been boycotting them because they have set up bathrooms. They've eliminated any barriers between men and women's bathrooms and also in the changing rooms. And they have refused any kind of kindness, any kind of outreach. They've just dug their heels in and refused to make any changes. And there have been assaults in these bathrooms as a result of that. And so I just want you to know, we've just found out that their stock has plunged 12%. And so we have, a million and a half signatures from people who say they're boycotting Target. And now we're looking for more. And so if you'd like to join us, we need to keep the pressure on. Target is a great place to shop. I miss it, to be honest with you. I miss it, but I'm not going there. You know, they took the lead on reducing or erasing any barriers in the bathrooms, and it's just wrong. It's just a bridge too far. And so I'm not shopping there. I know that now at least a million and a half of you are not shopping there with me. But there are more of you who could, you know, take a stand. You often say, you know, what can I do? Look at all these things happening. What can I do? Well, this is something you could do. This is something you could do. So go to AFA.net and sign up and join us. Let's put the pressure on them. Let's get them to reestablish the natural barriers between men and women in the privacy of bathrooms. That's all we're asking. We've even just asked them to put a bathroom that is gender neutral. Just put one bathroom there that transgender persons can access without accessing a bathroom that doesn't comport with their physical anatomy. And they won't do that. And so that's why we're in this position. And by the way, I want to tell you, speaking of all of that, Aaron and Melissa Klein, those young cake bakers in Oregon who lost their family bakery, they've been fined $135,000 because they would not create a custom cake for a same-sex wedding. They are having their day in court today in Oregon. And so that's just a matter of prayer. This couple has just been amazing to me. Just a young couple losing their business over this. And then there's Bernal Stutzman, who the Washington State Supreme Court has ruled against. She and her husband, Daryl. And now they're trying to fine them for not, in Bernal's case, it was doing a flower arrangement for a gay couple that she'd known for a long time, done work for them, and had a friendship. And then they really set her up. They knew that she'd have a problem doing flowers for a gay wedding. And so they went in and insisted that she did. She gave them names of other bakers. They refused to go to other other florists. And so then a Baronelle risked the loss of not only her business, but also all the things that they own. They're going after them privately. It's just an amazing story. And that's why we have to continue to lobby President Donald Trump on this whole religious freedom issue. We will do that. American Family Association is on the front lines of doing that, and there'll be more about that. All right, well, let's talk about the president's speech, the response to it, at least quickly. Van Jones, you know, is a communist. He was part of Barack Obama's administration early on, and now he works with CNN. And it's interesting, his response to Donald Trump's address to a joint session of Congress, let's listen.
He became president of the United States in that moment, period. There are a lot of people who have a lot of reason to be frustrated with him, to be fearful of him, to be mad at him. But that was one of the most extraordinary moments you have ever seen in American politics, period. And he did something extraordinary. And for people who have been hoping that he would become unifying, hoping that he might find some way to become presidential, they should be happy with that moment. For people who have been hoping that maybe he would remain a divisive cartoon, which he often finds a way to do, they should begin to become a little bit worried tonight. Because that thing you just saw him do, if he finds a way to do that over and over again, he's going to be there for 8 years. Now, there is a lot that he said in that speech that was counterfactual, that was not right, that I oppose and will oppose. But he did something tonight that you cannot take away from him. He became president of the United States.
All right, interesting. Van Jones, a communist by all descriptions, by personal description. Many are and don't claim it, but he does. And so that's what he had to say. Gail King from CBS said he said from the beginning he was going to speak from his heart, and he certainly did that. Fox News' Chris Wallace, I thought it was by far the best speech I've ever heard Donald Trump give. It was one of the best speeches in that setting I've ever heard any president give. Democratic strategist, contributor to CNN, Kirsten Powers, she said it was the best speech ever. Rachel Maddow even said it was well-received, and then she went on to criticize him. But it's just interesting. And there was a, you've probably heard about this, but I will tell you that Dan Grillo, who's a former worker for Hillary Clinton, said on his Twitter profile that this widow of U.S. Navy SEAL William Ryan Owens, this is what he says, sorry, Owens' wife, you're not helping yourself or your husband's memory by standing there and clapping like an idiot. Trump just used you. Well, that received a firestorm of criticism, and rightfully so. Can you imagine if you watched the speech? If you didn't, we put a link on our Facebook page yesterday, and I hope you will, because it was such a moving moment. The grief is so fresh, and she was grieving. So any of us that have known real grief could relate. It was heartbreaking. And so it was a moment where the both sessions, both sides of the House stood and applauded her. So he thought it was she made a fool of herself. And by the way, he's lost his job now. He works for a Chicago-based Liberty Advisor Group, and he has been laid off. So it's interesting how quickly things happen in this day and age. And, you know, we say that everyone stood in the House, but, you know, it's not true. Keith Ellison and Debbie Wasserman did not stand. They sat. There is a photo of them actually sitting. We should put this on our Facebook page so you can see it. They refused to stand up. Many of the Democrats stood for a couple of seconds, and then they sat down. And it went. She was applauded for two full minutes. So this grieving widow is standing there crying, and Keith Ellison and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Keith, who was is now the co-chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and Debbie, who's the outgoing chairman. And that's really interesting because it links into something else I wanted to tell you this morning. Where shall I start? Well, Keith Ellison is deeply affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood in America. And it's interesting to me, the Clarion Project is reporting today that the Muslim Brotherhood is saying they're spending $5 million on PR in the United States because the Trump administration is preparing, wanting, and I think intending, we'll see, to designate the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization, which they are, by the way. So Keith Ellison is affiliated with them, speaks for them, associated with groups sponsored by the Muslim Brotherhood, or affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, his buddy. They sit while this widow cries in the stands. They can't bother to stand up and give her honor and respect for her grief. And then there's a big article in the Wall Street Journal, and it's called "The Muslim Brotherhood Terrorist or Not?" And it's a long article, and of course the conclusion is, of course they're not. How silly! And it's written by Mr. Awad, who's a research fellow at George Washington University, and Mr. Tadros, a fellow at the Hudson Institute in Hoover. And now here's the thing. The Muslim Brotherhood are experts at deceiving. They are deceivers. Now, they're spending $5 million on PR in the United States so that they are not declared a terrorist organization. And yet we know that overseas, trust me, the rest of the world, Muslim world, understands their role. The Muslims who don't embrace Sharia know how dangerous. Ask anybody in Egypt who the Muslim Brotherhood is. And so now this long article in the Wall Street Journal is campaigned to prove that, oh, no, we're not affiliated with Hamas, but we know that they are. And that brings me to Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Keith Ellison. How interesting that the Daily Caller has a report today on those Pakistani brothers and family. Now it just keeps going on and on, who were IT, handling all the IT, not all, the IT for, I think, up to 100 staffers. Democratic staffers, Debbie Wasserman Schultz being one of them, paid $160,000 in some cases, one of them like 19 years old, receiving this, not showing up for work, their personal finances in a mess, all kinds of legal problems, now suspected of mishandling, maybe sharing confidential information because they were working for the intelligence committees in the House. For some reason, this story is not a very big story. No one can seem to find this, you see. It's all about Donald Trump's administration somehow colluding with the Russians, but nothing about these Pakistani IT workers working for members of the House of Representatives, obviously with full knowledge, at least a lot of knowledge about who they were and what they've been doing. There are five members under criminal investigation, but do you hear this except on my show or maybe Fox and some other conservative outlets? No, it's not being reported. This really is the big story. There are more than 15,000 congressional staff employees with an average age of 31, and 504 of the 500 highest paid staffers are suspects. Imran Awan collected $1.2 million in salary since 2010, and his brother Abid and wife Hima Alvi were each paid more than $1 million. And then it talks about just their past and their involvement in Pakistan and how they're gone. They're not even on the job. Many of them are just not even showing up. And so I'm going to ask Jeff or Adam to put this on our Facebook page. The Daily Caller is following this faithfully. It's Pakistani suspects in House IT probe receive $4 million from Democratic reps. Remember those same reps who set down during the tribute to the Ryan and his widow as she stood and cried and the House paid tribute, the joint session of Congress paid tribute to her. They sat, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Keith Ellison, they sat. Could there be a connection? I don't know. Me just wonders that. And by the way, in the last segment, I'm going to play for you an incredible interview that Tucker Carlson did last night with John Cornyn. Senator John Cornyn. It is just amazing. It really does expose so much of what I've been telling you about the establishment. I don't think that John Cornyn knew what he was getting into. You have to hear it. I'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this family, Jeremy and Sharon, and a couple kids, and they're all very healthy, and they did something to save money. They switched from health insurance to MediShare, and then they had a third baby. a little girl named Anya, and she was very sick.
We've had a lot of hospital visits.
A whole week in a children's hospital, CAT scans and blood tests and chemical tests, and I think we saw a dozen doctors. It was all shared.
Yeah, the bills were shared by the other members of MediShare. That's how this works. So get this, they save hundreds a month. They don't have to deal with health insurance companies or government health care plans, and they get to be part of a community that cares.
MediShare has always been there for us and helped meet the needs that we have as a family.
It's no wonder this is growing so fast. It is worth looking into. Here's how. Call 855-PSALM-23. Now, it's available everywhere but Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Revival has been described as an extraordinary movement of the Holy Spirit producing extraordinary results. Isn't that what we need in America? Well, by God's grace, it can happen.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association.
Jonathan Edwards was a preacher during the First Great Awakening in America. In his account of what he saw God do, he commented, "The assembly were in tears while the word was preached, some weeping with sorrows and distress, others with joy and love, others with concern for the souls of their neighbors." If only God in His mercy would do that great work again.
If you have a heart to see the Lord bring revival to America, we encourage you to gather with us at Fusion, the Heart Cry for Revival Conference in late April in Asheville, North Carolina. To register or to find out more, go to heartcryforrevival.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. Pavel Fesyuk of Rochester, New York, is an exterminator by day and a cage fighter by night. The other day, he was at a red light when he noticed a motorist in distress. The driver had something lodged in his throat. Others drove around the stricken man, but Pavel pulled over to help, and the entire episode was captured on a dash cam video. Now, the victim was much larger than Pavel, so the Heimlich maneuver was out of the question. So Pavel improvised, using a move he normally uses to take down fighters. And sure enough, it worked. You can watch the video on ToddStarnes.com. His colleagues are calling him a hero, but Pavel said he just offered to help someone in need, much like a Good Samaritan once did in a time long past, lending comfort and aid to a stranger when others turned away. A modern-day parable. In Rochester, New York, I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Late today, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell held a Republican members-only meeting to try to get all on the same page with the president on health care.
It must be the plan they want, not the plan forced on them by our government.
With Congress wrestling with repealing and replacing Obamacare, President Trump provided lawmakers with some direction.
We should help Americans purchase their own coverage through the use of tax credits and expanded health savings accounts.
However, Senators Ted Cruz of Texas, Mike Lee of Utah, and Rand Paul of Kentucky have all said they're opposed to offering tax credits to help Americans buy insurance.
People are trying to make it too elaborate now, and they're adding in some government programs that I object to. So, for example, if you give people back money that they did not pay in taxes, that is basically an entitlement program.
House Chairman Greg Walden from Energy and Commerce and Kevin Brady from Ways and Means were asked to defend the tax credit idea in front of senators. Some moderates have said they won't back a bill that rolls back the Obamacare Medicaid expansion, which covers an estimated 11 million Americans. Others are downplaying GOP differences.
This notion that because there's five different ideas about it, that's a sign of weakness is ridiculous. Should we all be marching like robots in lockstep, listening to whatever they mandate down our throat?
Some things take a little while to get right. We have legislation. What we're doing now is not arguing over how you want to go a certain direction.
Democrats don't sound eager to help.
So you want to sit down and talk? Let's see what your plans are. See if you can get your own act together before you're pointing the finger at Democrats.
Top GOP leaders continue to insist they must act.
Americans were promised costs would go down, but of course they went up. Americans were promised more choice, but they got less. Americans were promised they could keep their plans, but that was a broken promise as well.
All right, that was Mike Emanuel's report last night on Fox News. This is Sandy Rios back. Interesting, Obamacare is almost 7 years old. Can you believe that? And the Republicans have been saying, you know, every year, every session, we're going to repeal. And now they could, and yet they're stalling. But that brings me to the next topic, because actually, remember that the Obamacare legislation was really, it gave birth to the Tea Party movement. I remember being in Washington, September of that first rally here on Capitol Hill. And it was just an amazing thing, because people were upset, and they are still upset. Well, the Tea Party was founded, well, I guess 7 years ago. I didn't stop to count. But Debbie Dooley knows all about that, because she's a co-founder of the Tea Party. She's from Atlanta, Georgia, and she joins us this morning. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you doing this morning? And the Tea Party on February 27th was 8 years old.
8 years old, and okay.
Yes, 8 years old. I can't believe it.
Debbie, what was the catalyst for you? What was it when you said, man, I got to get involved?
Well, I was actually upset with some of the policies under the Bush administration, in particular the Wall Street bailout, the Wall Street bailout that took place. And people were upset. And then under Obama, it was with all the bailouts and Rick Santilli's rant on the Chicago trading floor.
Yep.
Actually, we were all sitting saying, what can we do? And his rant, it was like little light bulbs that went off in our heads, and 22 of us planned a call to launch the Tea Party movement.
You know, Debbie, I'm from Chicago, and I was in Chicago doing talk radio when he did that. And it was quite an eruption.
Good.
Yes, quite an eruption. All right. Well, you know, many people have called these town hall meetings that are taking place around the country with Congress as the start of a new Tea Party movement. There are a lot of comparisons being made, and I'd be curious to know what you think about that comparison.
Well, you know, my initial feelings are that I can remember when the Tea Party movement was founded, we were attacked by the left. We were skewered by the mainstream media. They were all saying we would not last. We were a flash in the pan. We would not be successful. Now, by them trying to mimic the Tea Party movement, they are admitting that the Tea Party movement was successful. You don't try to mimic something that's not its success. But we are totally different. At our Tea Party rallies, you never saw not one person standing up saying that they thought about blowing up the White House. You never saw garbage. You never saw garbage left. You never saw rioting or looting or hatred for America like you see at some of the rallies. And part of what made the Tea Party successful was actually our message. And our message appealed to people that, you know, to voters that were upset about all the bailouts and upset about Obamacare. And this year, Obamacare turned 7. We need to put pressure on Congress to not let Obamacare turn 7. We need to repeal it as soon as possible.
I think one of the points that that we need to make, Debbie, the Tea Party was stopped. At least it seemed that it was slowed down and stunted through the use of the IRS coming after it. All these investigations and asking for speeches and not giving 501c3 status, the harassment, really. But the truth is, I think the Tea Party, the spirit of it, stayed alive, and that's what really elected Donald Trump this year. That's my personal opinion about it. But Donald, go ahead. I'd like you to respond to that.
Yes, I totally agree, and I've said that all along. I think the Tea Party is evolving, and we Ralph King and I co-founded Main Street Patriots last year during the primary. We realized that once Donald Trump was elected, we would need to support his agenda. We never did anything with it, and then we formed the Spirit of America rallies to support President Trump and his agenda, his America First agenda. And I think the Tea Party is kind of evolving into a group that where they're going to support the president's agenda.
All right, and with that in mind, you guys have planned two specific rallies. One of them took place on Monday But I think arguably you have a lot more events planned for this Saturday, March the 4th. And that's why I want to talk to you, Debbie, because they're called a couple of things. In some cases, the Spirit of America rally, and others, March for Trump. I guess it depends on the location. So tell us what's happening this Saturday.
Well, we had, on Monday, we had the first series of rallies. And Spirit of America and March for Trump are like different groups, and they have their rallies in one location, and, you know, we don't conflict with them. But we are having 56 rallies Saturday, 56 Saturday. And we do know the left is mobilizing in some of the areas. Some of the violent anarchists will be attending the rallies. On Monday, we had 10 rallies that took place on Monday, and had 25 people that took time off on a weekday at noon to go to the rallies. They were very positive, upbeat, diverse. Saturday, some of the larger rallies we're trying to drive people to. If you're in the Washington, D.C. area, there's a rally at Lafayette Park, and that is the intersection of H Street, and 17th Street.
Yeah, Debbie, let's talk more. Yes, absolutely, and I'm glad you said that, but this is a national show, so we want to let people know where they are around the country. So mainstreetpatriots.us, is that right? Is that where they can go and find out?
If you go to mainstreetpatriots.us, and you'll be able to find the rally. And we encourage you to sign up for our email list, because this is the beginning. In May, around Memorial Day weekend, we are looking at holding a big rally at CNN. In Atlanta, but we encourage you to stand forward at the rallies. You see a lot of God, country, patriotism at the rallies. A lot of the rallies on Monday opened with a prayer, and if it had not been, the Tea Party was instrumental in electing Donald Trump, but had it not been for the Christian conservatives getting activated and getting out to vote, he would not have been elected president. And I'm a preacher's kid. My dad was an independent Baptist preacher. So I'm glad that the Christian conservatives are actively engaged by large numbers.
Well, let me give their website again, because people will want to go. They will want to go. They'll want to know where a rally is near them. So it's mainstreetpatriots.us, mainstreetpatriots.us. And Debbie, I heard you say the other day, you were on Fox and Friends, I think, earlier in the week, and you said you're getting thousands and thousands of inquiries now about these rallies, right?
Yes, we are. And again, go to mainstreetpatriots.us. You will find information. We're still getting emails from people that are saying, I want to have a rally in my state. And it's too late this time. But, this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. So we will be active. We will be stepping out and supporting our president and supporting his America First agenda. And we need your help to get engaged, get involved. We need turnouts, because we know the left is going to turn out. And we're peaceful. But we need you to go and turn out at a rally near you. We have 56 on Saturdays. These are smaller rallies because we wanted to give everybody a chance to attend the rally instead of focusing on just a few large rallies. We want to give you a voice.
All right, so it's mainstreetpatriots.us, mainstreetpatriots.us, and I'm sure at that website you can figure out how to get more involved if you like, I'm guessing. So, hey, Debbie, it's great to talk to you and great to meet you, a co-founder of the Tea Party. And that's not a small thing, Debbie. You guys have done a great service to the country. So thank you for all that you have done as a private citizen to try to hold back some really bad stuff. So thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to be on your show and get our message out. You do great work. Your show is very well respected. And I thank you for allowing me to be on your radio show this morning and help us get the word out about the Spirit of America rallies.
Oh, we'll put it on our Facebook page, too, by the way. I forgot to say that part. We'll link it so you can go there and figure out easily how to find a place near you and how you can get involved. So, Debbie Dooley, thank you so much, and I hope things go really well Saturday. We'll be anxious to look to see what's happening.
Thank you, Sandy, and you have a blessed morning.
All right, you too. All right, well, listen, that's great, and I hope that you will do that. MainStreetPatriots.us. I hope that if that's something that you feel you can support. I think the Tea Party has been certainly the theme has been support of the United States of America, the support of the vision of the founders for the United States of America, more than the support of a candidate. But it just so happens that Donald Trump now seems to be verbalizing much of what the Tea Party was talking about. And so there's a merger there. So if you're in consort with that, go to MainStreetPatriots.us or go to our Facebook page and we'll put information on there. We're going to take a break because when we come back, I want you to hear Tucker Carlson interviewing Senator John Cornyn last night. I have told you before that there's a serious problem in the Senate. I pick on the Senate a lot. There's a serious problem in the House as well. But I want you to hear what John Cornyn has to say to Tucker because it's just worth it. We're going to play the whole segment. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello, I'm Ed Vitagliano, co-host of Today's Issues each weekday morning on American Family Radio. I'm also Executive Vice President of American Family Association, the parent ministry of AFR. I just want to welcome the many new listeners to the AFR family as we have expanded into several new areas over the past 6 months. Who pays for AFR to stay on the air, you might be asking? Well, the answer is simple. AFR depends on our listeners to make financial contributions so that we can keep our radio stations on the air. If you appreciate the news, talk, information, and inspiration that you receive from AFR each day, we ask that you remember us financially when funds allow. You can make a donation at AFR.net or by calling 800-FAMILIES extension 2. That's AFR.net or 800-FAMILIES. Please keep us in your prayers as we continue to impact America for Christ.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each afternoon at 4 p.m. Central Time for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others every day on AFR.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson, the First Lady of the United States, praying a Christian prayer in public. Seriously? Sadly, your local township supervisor might be hesitant to pray at the local town hall. Yet here was Melania Trump praying the Lord's Prayer before a watching world. What have we come to as a people that we have such skepticism? For I know many of you had such feelings as myself. Who rules the United States anyway? Satan or God? We want God to bless America, and yet we don't know how to respond when the First Lady prays the Lord's Prayer. We want to cry out to God, Hallelujah, Jesus yet lives in America. Please, Lord, bring revival and restoration to our embattled America. Help us to be discerning and keep us from skepticism when it's unwarranted. Renew a right spirit within us. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The effort to destroy President Trump's presidency has a new target, Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The Washington Post breathlessly reports he had two meetings with the Russian ambassador while he worked on the Trump campaign that he failed to disclose during his confirmation hearings. Those seeking to parlay this revelation into the Attorney General's neutralization, if not actually his resignation, are ignoring an inconvenient fact. His interactions with Ambassador Sergei Kislyak were not campaign-related. They occurred in the course of the day job of a then-United States senator. One involved an event with the Russian and other foreign diplomats, the other in his Senate office in connection with his duties as a member of the Armed Services Committee. Jeff Sessions was a harsh critic of Vladimir Putin's Russia in the Senate. Thank God he's now America's Attorney General. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. I want to devote this segment to a point I make over and over again, and that is that there are people serving in Congress who are, especially on the Republican aisle, which is the one I pick on as much as any, in leadership, who are undermining what the American people want. And certainly they're undermining now, I believe, what Donald Trump is trying to do. And I want to give you an example before I play this this audio from Tucker Carlson's show last night. Rob Portman from Ohio, his history is that he withdrew his support for Donald Trump. In fact, I'm reading to you from something that came from his office. This is not some opposition to Rob Portman. This is, they're boasting about this, that he withdrew his support from Donald Trump. And on the heels of that, this article says, Senator Rob Portman and the GOP establishment have quietly stocked the new administration with close allies. There's no more archetypal Washington operator than Ohio Republican and former House member U.S. Trade Representative, Office of Management and Budget Head and lower level White House staffer. And now he's got a direct line in the Trump White House on national and home state priorities. It's not only him, it's House Speaker Ryan, Senate Majority Leader McConnell, and it's also Trent Lott, Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott, who is making money hand over fist on K Street as a lobbyist. All of them now have planted people inside the Trump administration, none of them supporting him for his election. One of Portman's best friends, fellow George W. Bush administration alum Joe Hagan, is a White House deputy chief of staff. Portman has served former staffers who have already burrowed into the nascent administration. And it goes on to give a lot of details about what's happening. I'm surprised, actually, in some cases. And then another person says these are all Reince Priebus hires. I don't think Trump has any idea who these people are. They are literally all the people he ran against. Okay, that's a precursor to what I'm going to show you now, or have you listen to now, because Trump, Tucker Carlson had Senator John Cornyn on his show last night. I don't think Senator Cornyn had any idea what direction this was going to go. I'll say no more. I'll just let Tucker say it because he does it better than I do. Let's listen.
We're now a full 2 months into the 115th Congress. How well have Republicans done with their unified control of both houses, plus the presidency, the entire government? Well, so far, they passed no major legislation, haven't held a hearing for Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch, and still have not confirmed four of the president's cabinet picks. More meaningfully, perhaps, they also haven't confirmed dozens of political appointees you have never heard of, but who are critical for running the government. The Senate's been in session for 57 days so far. They've already taken 22 days off. They'll have a massive two-week break in April, too. What exactly is going on up there? Senator John Cornyn is the Senate Majority Whip. As Whip, his job is to win Senate votes by keeping Republican senators in line. Senator Cornyn of Texas joins us now. Senator, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Tucker.
So we checked the record of the Obama administration in its first couple of months in office in early 2009 against the record here. Now, Obama had a Democratic Congress, as you know. So by March 1st, 8 years ago, the Congress had passed and the president had signed the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. They'd renewed SCHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program. They'd signed a $831 billion stimulus bill. And, of course, the Congress had approved the president's plan for withdrawing from Iraq. They've done an awful lot. This Congress, Republican Congress, doesn't seem to have done much at all. Why hasn't anything been done so far? exactly?
Well, the main reason is because Democrats have been dragging their feet on nominations and burning up time. For example, Ryan Zinke was approved by a substantial supermajority today. Wilbur Ross by, I think, 72 votes last night.
Right.
There's no reason to deny the president his cabinet other than just to burn up time and make it impossible for us to turn to other legislation. So it's enormously frustrating, but this is the way the system unfortunately operates when people are determined to drag their heels.
So why so much time off then? Why does the Senate take so much time off? 40% of the days since this Congress convened, the Senate has not been working. In April, according to the Senate calendar, you guys are only working for 10 days the entire month. If it's taking more time than expected, then why not work more?
Well, we didn't get a president until January the 20th, and that's about 5 weeks ago, roughly. And yes, we were in session for most of that time. We did take a week to return home. I took a number of my colleagues to the border, thinking it was important, with all the attention given to border security and trade and taxes and the like, to take some of my colleagues from North Carolina and Nevada to learn more about the important relationship, economic relationship we have with Mexico because of bilateral trade. And those are the kinds of things you do when we're not in session. So it's,
right.
It's, I dare say it's not taking time off.
All right. So Tucker doesn't need my help. You just have to hear this. I want you to listen to what Senator John Cornyn had to say. Now, he's already said, oh, it's the Democrats. Tucker's saying, why are you taking so much time off? Knowing that these nominees are not going through, why are you taking, you've taken 40% off since Congress convened for this session? And his reason is because, the Democrats are dragging their feet. It's frustrating. But, Tucker, well, then why are you taking so much time off? Well, we had to take our colleagues to the border, you know, and just because it's important. And that's what we do when we're having so-called time off. But Tucker was not to be put off. Let's listen to cut two.
Well, and I don't think you all are lazy. I don't mean to suggest that. I just mean that there's a new government elected in November, and they can't govern because they can't get their people appointed. As you know, I mean, I've spoken to people at the cabinet level who say, my guys aren't going to get confirmed until the middle of the summer, till July. I mean, that's kind of a crisis. So why not forestall the trip to Mexico and just get the government installed? Wouldn't that be a better course?
Well, there is a problem in that many of the sub-cabinet nominees have not yet been nominated. And so there is nothing for the Senate to operate on. I'm hopeful that the White House will accelerate the nomination process and get them to us so we can take them up and confirm them. But you're right. It's enormously frustrating to all of us, but it's a combination of both obstruction on the Democratic side and the, at least so far, the administration not getting these sub-cabinet appointees to us for confirmation.
But, I mean, you all could just drop the hammer on the Democrats and do it, couldn't you?
Well, we can't make the White House nominate sub-cabinet nominees. We can grind through the cabinet-level nominees, and we literally have been doing it. Under the Senate rules, we can get to about three a week when they are obstructing as they are now. And again, this is part of their relitigation, I guess, of their loss on November the 8th. They simply have not gotten beyond the denial and now anger. Sooner or later, I think they're going to have to reconcile themselves to the fact that they lost to the election, but, and then try to be productive.
Well, I mean, I'm no, you know, PhD in Senate order, but don't, I mean, you could force this stuff. You could just do it. You have the votes, don't you? Don't Republicans have the votes to do whatever they want, essentially, short of a Supreme Court nomination?
Well, on confirmations, you're right. It takes 51 votes now instead of the 60, thanks
right?
to Harry Reid. But it did not affect the process by which it takes us aggravatingly long time in order to confirm nominees. So the most we've been able to do, given Democratic obstruction, is three a week. And that's one reason for the slow pace. It's just no excuse for it, but that's unfortunately the process.
All right, so here's the deal. It's, you know what, why are you taking so much time off? Knowing it's taking so long, why are you, because it's Trump's fault, because he hasn't nominated all those lower level, and it's the obstruction of the Democrats. But why don't you just press through? Don't you have the ability to just press? No, Trump hasn't given us these lower level, and, you know, and the Democrats are obstructing. So it's a non-answer. So Tucker does not let up. Thank goodness. Let's go to cut three.
So, I mean, it does seem from an outsider's perspective like maybe there's an ideological component here. I know that a lot of Republicans in Washington don't agree with some of the president's priorities. And if you look at the bills, and we took a check of this, that are languishing in committee, I just wonder if any of these will ever get out. So Kate's law, the famous Kate Steinle law that would set mandatory minimums for illegal immigrants reentering the country, is sitting in a committee. The bill that would revoke any chance of becoming a citizen for U.S. nationals engaged in terrorism. It's, I mean, you could kind of go down the list. A bill that would prevent refugees from being settled in states if the governor opposes it. Do Republicans and leadership support those efforts, do you think?
Well, I think by and large, we are supportive of the administration's positions. But the bills that you mentioned, of course, died at the end of the Obama administration,
right?
Had to be refiled, and so they have to go through the committee process. Part of why the Judiciary Committee is delayed now is because we're working and anticipating the confirmation of Judge Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. Other committees are working primarily on the Obamacare repeal and replace, which will take place in the coming few weeks. That's been our focus, along with tax reform, which we plan to do shortly after that. So I share with you your frustration about the slow pace. Unfortunately, a lot of that's built into the process, but
right.
We're determined to get some important things done.
So, I mean, reassure Republicans who voted for Trump that none of this is being slow walked. I know a lot of people who work on Capitol Hill who are Republicans who did not vote for Donald Trump. They voted for Hillary Clinton. Some of them are in your office, by the way. Are you sure that your staff, it's true, are you sure that your staff and the staff of other leaders on the Republican side in the Senate and the House are really supportive of this agenda?
We are fully supportive of President Trump and his agenda, and we're trying to do our best to help him. He's new to governing, and we all understand that. That's one reason he got elected, because people thought he would bring change to the way Washington operates, and he already has. So we fully support the president's agenda, and we're working with him. Had lunch over at the White House today with the speaker, the majority leader of both houses, trying to figure out how to advance the president's agenda and get it accomplished. And we are on that path as I speak.
Yeah, so we had lunch today. We're not getting the bills out of committee, but we had lunch today. So we're talking about it, and we're recessing. We've been gone 40% of the time that since we've convened this Congress. But we're Tucker, don't worry, nothing to see. It's the Democrats, you see. It's not us. And the fact that they're not out of committee, it has nothing to do with us. So then Tucker goes further. Let's listen.
Part of his agenda is building a wall. He campaigned on it. Your state voted for him in part because of that. And then you were quoted the other day saying you're not for a wall and the people of Texas are not for a wall. What gives you that impression, considering I think you won your state 9 points, something like that, pretty definitive win, running on the wall? Why would you think your voters would not be for that?
Well, I'm the Texas border, and one reason I took my colleagues to Texas was to show them this 1,200-mile border, some of which has 3,500-foot cliffs in the Big Bend area where no wall is really necessary. There are other areas where infrastructure is important, barriers, if you say, so to speak, but it's really a combination of personnel, technology, and infrastructure. We're working right now with the Department of Homeland Security to come up with a plan to actually implement the president's goal of securing the border. It's long overdue, and I fully support that. We intend to try to make that happen.
But he said, not to be a stickler on semantics, but he said, I want a wall. I want a big, beautiful wall. I mean, that was from the first day of his campaign until last. I want a wall. So why would you think that voters in your state, exempting like the cliffs, but for the rest of the border, why wouldn't they want a wall too? Didn't they vote for that?
I don't think I think they voted for border security. How we accomplish that, I think they expect us to use our best judgment to try to accomplish. It's really just a matter of political will. We know how to do it. It's the problem has been we haven't had a president who actually believed in border security. We do now, and we're fully trying to support and implement that effort together with Interior Enforcement, which represents people who come in and overstay, represent 40% of illegal immigration, and we don't do nearly enough to discourage that.
Right. So, no, for sure. So you think
so
your voters,
with the president,
when they voted for Trump, they weren't voting for the wall he promised. They're voting for Republican senators to figure out how to secure the border, but they didn't really mean a wall when they voted for a guy who promised a wall.
They expect us to use our best judgment and our experience to accomplish that goal, I think. And a wall, I have to tell you, Tucker, is not going to stop illegal immigration if you don't have the personnel on the ground to catch them, if you don't have the technology, the eyes in the sky in order to detect them, so Border Patrol can actually get there in time. There are places where a physical barrier is entirely appropriate, and we ought to be putting them there, but we ought to come up with the right combination that allows us to accomplish the goal efficiently and effectively without wasting taxpayer dollar. That's been my goal.
All right, so there you go. I wanted you to hear the whole thing because, Tucker Carlson on his new show, and by the way, Tucker, I go back a long way with Tucker, not that this is important to this discussion, but when I was president of CWA, I hosted Crossfire probably three different times, and one particular time, well, anyway, I hosted and Tucker and I would be on together. One particular time, I got into it with James Carville, and that was a pretty stunning moment. And that's how Tucker and I actually became allies. Not that I see him a lot now, but he's doing a great job on his new show. He was just a really very young when I was on. I guess I was a lot younger too when we were on Crossfire together. But he has really become a very serious person on these issues. You know, a lot of people that you see on television, I think it's just a game. It's just a game. It's like everything's political to them. But I don't think that's the case with Tucker. And so now he's taking on every night, night by night, members of the left. He's, you know, putting them on the hot spot and taking them to test. But I don't know. To my knowledge, I don't watch him every night. I don't think he's ever taken on a so-called conservative leader. But he really took John Cornyn apart last night. If you listen to those answers, you can hear that Senator Cornyn is not answering those questions. He is deflecting. And he is one of the top lieutenants in the Senate. And certainly he is responsible in part for the Senate taking so much time off. He is responsible in part for the fact that they are not pushing through these nominations. You know, they can meet. They don't have to recess. When they recess, they can work around the clock. The first 100 days of a presidential administration is always the most crucial. That's when they can get the most things done. And the question that Tucker asked him is what I had wondered, too. Are they slow walking this? Are they taking their time? Are they trying to obstruct? Oh, of course, Cornyn's response to that is, you know, when Tucker said a lot of the members of your staff voted for Hillary Clinton. Oh, well, I saw changing the subject. He couldn't answer. He couldn't respond to that. How can that be? How can a member of the Republican leadership have a staff that voted for Hillary Clinton? I ask you, and I ask those of you in Texas, to really examine your senator and what he's doing for your state. This is a very serious problem. I say this often. I pick on Mitch McConnell a lot, John McCain a lot, Lindsey Graham. I think that there is a problem. I think, Houston, we have a problem. And I think it's time for Americans to wake up because they have become, from my perspective, obstructionists. They, not that they weren't before, but it's just becoming more apparent. And so I think you need to pay, if this is fine with you, if you agree that Senator Cornyn's contributing, there's no question about this. By taking all this time off in the Senate, they are slow walking. You could just say that. If it wasn't happening in the committees where the legislation is not getting out, then how about just not meeting for session? How about taking all of these breaks? How about not advancing legislation? How about Rob Portman bragging that they've got their people quietly stocked in the new administration with their own allies? What's that all about? And you just need to know that we have people inside the Republican Party who are not friends. You know, they never said, I think of George W. Bush, who never said a word about Barack Obama for 8 years and never said a word about Bill Clinton. They were like brothers from another mother, he said. And now he's all about saying bad things about President Trump. I don't understand that. And I just don't understand why that segment of the Republican Party hates conservatives more than they hate the left. Explain that to me. I have to take a break. Well, a 24-hour break. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.